Welcome, everyone, to the Food, Farms, and Chefs radio show with restaurant industry author Kevin Wilson, highly acclaimed chef Gene Blum, and food photojournalist Amaris Pollock. Join them as they interview the biggest names in the restaurant industry, tell you about the latest food trends, and give you recipes and cooking tips, too. So let's get the show started.
Welcome to our listeners around the world via the podcast and our Facebook podcast platform, our listeners on our FM station in New York, and our two Philadelphia radio stations. It's Tuesday evening drive time for you. We have a great show today, so let's get it started.
Welcome, everyone, to the Food, Farms, and Chefs radio show and podcast. I am so excited to introduce this guest, bringing international flavors, unique baked goods to the Philadelphia region. It is such an honor to introduce Chef Marjorie Santos Chapita of Cuquette Bakery, Brazilian Bakehouse. Marjorie, welcome to Food, Farms, and Chefs. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So to start off with, before we get into your inspiration and where you learned your craft, why don't you explain to our bakery some of the predominant flavors that you can find in Brazilian baked goods that might be a little traditionally different than French pastries or some of the pastries that we're accustomed to seeing here in Philadelphia?
So the flavors, I think the main ingredient and main fruit I use at Cuquette is guava. So it's something very common in Brazil, like where I'm from, Brasilia, you're walking in the middle of the streets and then you just see a tree with guava there. So we use a lot of guava and I try to, you know, make as much pastry as I can with guava because I just love it. But also there's this fruit from the Amazon called cupuaçu. It's from the same cacao family. So I'm trying to, you know, incorporate that flavor into our pastry too. It's a little different, so you have to play around with the pastries that are like already different, already not very familiar, to make something that people are going to be interested in trying.
Well, I think if people are like me and they walk in and they see something a little different, and a lot of baked goods especially, everyone's a little reluctant to try foods that may be a little different. You know, they're like, ooh, you got to look at it, things like that. Pastries is never that issue. I don't care where the pastry from. You got pastry out there, there's a little bit of sugar, there's some fruit, there's some flavor. I'm going to probably go and get that. So I know this is going to be an exciting moment in Philadelphia to be able to come in and try your pastries and try your baked goods and experience some of these South American flavors. Probably the region in America, maybe outside of India, where we really have the least representation in the Philadelphia area. You know, people that in the Philadelphia area, really there's not the baked goods and the restaurants around showcasing South America flavors. We have a little bit of Central America being represented. So this is really such an exciting thing that you're doing. Tell us a little bit about how you got started. What was your inspiration?
So I always loved to cook. I watched, my grandma cooking when growing up. And that's it. That's what I always knew. I wanted to be in the kitchen. I always felt like I belonged there. So, after high school, I went to culinary school and I learned, and I learned everything, a lot of things from my grandma too, worked in a lot of restaurants. And when it was time to, open my own place, I knew that I wanted to bring a little bit of Brazil, especially the pastries where I think it's, there is not a lot of people bringing all that stuff from Brazil to the rest of the world. So my inspiration was it's my family and, my country and the beautiful flavors you can find there. And, it's so nice.
Well, and I think it's important to note for our listeners that people are going to say, Gene, we have Brazilian steakhouses everywhere. There is a little bit of a difference from what you're doing and the traditional Brazilian steakhouse that is an absolute incredible feast of meats and beef. But, you're doing and you're working with flavors veteran pastry and you know, guava and fruits from South America. And, you know, even the chocolate's going to be a little bit different. So, you know, this is really something that's new and unique. When you came to this idea, was it always the bakehouse or the bake shop that you were looking at, or were you, you know, originally considering a restaurant or, you know, something that was a little bit more or full service, you know, but you ended up really specializing in you know, pastries and sweets. You know, obviously you have a lot of flavors that you could bring to the table across the board. Why did you decide on pastries?
So in school, I really like the precision, you know, of the pastries. I like how I love chemistry, and I love how like we can play with that in pastry and baking, and how everything has to be, you know, like measured, and everything has to be, you know, almost perfect. So I love that precision, and I think it's I can express that better in pastry and baking, and you know, I love sweets too.
Well, one of the things that I know about Brazilian desserts is you do a dish, I guess the American translation of it would be a cake roll or a Brazilian cake roll that is just a very thin layer of icing. You know, it's very unique to Brazil. Can you explain what a Brazilian cake roll is to our listeners? Because I do know that it's one of your specialties.
Yeah, it's actually how I started the business 4 years ago, just doing cake rolls for farmers markets and pop-up markets. So the cake rolls are very thin layers of butter cake and traditionally filled with guava paste. So that's the flavor you would find in Brazil. They are from the northeast of Brazil, you know, very, very popular there. But here I try to bring other flavors and try to use flavors from like what is in season and from like makers that, you know, make this like different jam. I would like to put that in the cake roll too. So I have like the birthday cake, for example, or the double chocolate, and like the seasonal flavors like blueberry if it's like blueberry season. But yeah, it's like just the same layer of cake filled with a variety of flavor combinations.
Well, two other things that you produce a little bit of it, and certainly it's going to be very different than people are accustomed to, but you also do truffles, if I'm correct.
Right.
There, you know, there is, I guess, the Brasilian name for them is brigadeiros, you know, that are right. A little bit different. That's a really difficult process. I mean, you're working in climate-controlled rooms for the most part. Tell us a little bit about your truffles.
Yeah, so they are condensed milk-based truffles. So, you know, we cook the condensed milk with cocoa powder and a little bit of butter until you have the truffle texture. And then you roll into, like, little balls and coat with sprinkles. But I like to, before coating on sprinkles, I like to dip on chocolate, so you have the crunchy chocolate shell and then the soft truffle inside and then the nice chocolate vermicelli sprinkles on the outside.
Okay, now I want a few of them. One of the other things, I am a huge fan of anything custard or flan, you know, the egg dairy mixture. In Brazil, there's a very unique one. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about your flan and, you know, what the history of that is out of Brazil and the flavors that go with that?
Yeah, so Brazil, like the U.S., is a huge country with a lot of influence from, you know, everywhere in the world, a lot of immigration. So we get all this culinary influence from everywhere. And the flan, that we call them tingin, it's like a egg custard with coconut, because coconut is the fruit they couldn't find there, or, you know, they couldn't find almonds, which is traditionally made with almonds. So they found the coconut and they turn into coconut flour, mix into the egg sugar and cooked just like on bain-marie, like with the flan. And the egg, the coconut, it sinks to the bottom of the custard and create this cakey layer. And then, so you have these two layers of cake and very like the custard, the egg custard on top. And it's just like so silky, and you get the crunch from the coconut. It's really special dessert.
The first time I had it was in Disney, and many years ago at the Disney Culinary Institute. And I just kind of fell in love. It, you know, it was a flavor and a texture, and the silkiness to it really just, you know, stole my heart. And, you know, I also had the Tres Leches there, which was really real Tres Leches, not what you get here oftentimes. And, you know, they were two things that, you know, desserts that I'll never forget to this day. A little bit more to the savory side, one of the specialties that you do, and I'm not even going to attempt the name of this. I always just call it a cheese bread, but it's a Brazilian style cheese bread. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah, the pão de queijo. It's a Brazilian staple. You know, like I said before, Brazil is a very big country, and every region is a little bit different from each other. But this particular like snack, like little bread, you can find it every household in Brazil. It's what, like, every family have their own recipe. So it's basically tapioca flour and a blend of cheeses and, you know, eggs, milk, oil. And, yeah, and it makes this, you know, beloved little bread. Like, everyone really loves it.
It really is something that you can just sit down and have a piece at night before you go to bed. You can have it early in the day. You can have it with a meal. It's just an outstanding item across the board. And, you know, it gives that richness. It'll actually even go well with a good glass of wine. I mean, it's just a fabulous thing to have. And, you know, I suggest to our listeners, go out, you know, locate her and have some of this, and you'll find out where we can find your product towards the end of the show. But, you know, really just go out and explore these flavors. One of the things that I really like about you is you're big on sustainability and local products. You like to source everything locally as much as you can. And with some of your products, that must be a little bit hard, but, you know, you really do that. So where is this something that came about from, you know, family heritage in Brazil, or this love of sourcing local and being sustainable? Tell us a little bit about that influence.
Yeah, so in Brazil, we all have our own little garden in the backyard. So it's very easy for us to just, you know, the weather let us do that, to just go there and grab a little, like a few herbs, or, you know your butcher, you know, your the stand, you go in the farmer's market. So it's very common to have this practice in Brazil. And I think coming here, and meeting a lot, I started at the farmers market, so meeting a lot of farmers and a lot of makers made me think, like, well, I'm coming to this new country, I'm bringing my culture, but I also want to contribute to what we find here, and it's just fair to, you know, to have to use as much as I can from the place that is opening, you know, the doors for me. For this new culture. So that's why I try to use as much as I can, as much product locally sourced as I can. Some things you can't, like you can't not find chocolate in the U.S. It doesn't grow here, or guava, but I make sure to buy the other ingredients, always fair trade, and it's really important for me. It's a practice that I want to, you know, always, and I want my business to really take, because it really helps the community and the society as one.
So I have to ask, now that you have your brick and mortar down in East Passyunkin, down in that way, were you part of yesterday's Flavors of the Avenue?
Yeah, and it was amazing. It was so much fun.
It's a big crowd. It's a big crowd. Well, congratulations, and thank you for being on our show, because I'm sure that after yesterday you had to be exhausted after Flavors of the Avenue. And I'm hoping that many, many, many people stop by and really sample your product so they understand that. That is such an incredible festival.
Yeah.
It really does
it
bring such
a
really large group.
It was really nice.
Great. Well, now that you have your brick and mortar, so tell us about that. I mean, you actually started that process, you know, when we were still kind of in the grip of COVID and, you know, things were a little bit harder. It had to be a very scary time, you know, considering that you were looking to open up a brick and mortar and not sure where, you know, we were going in the city with mandates and everything else. What was that experience like?
Yeah, we're still not sure about anything, but I had a lot of help from business owners that I met here in Philly and the community that came and support me at the farmers markets and the pop-up market. So it was really like a blessing to be here at this moment. It was just everyone helping each other, and that's what helped me to get to where I am now, to the store. There is really no secret. It was just the community that really supports my business.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. We really do have a great, vibrant food scene in Philadelphia, and people always want to lend a hand and help each other. So aside from Sisterly Love, which is one of our great markets here in the city, what other markets can people find your products at?
So markets right now, we are just going to do like a few pop-ups during the year. Maybe, you know, we love to pop up outside Riverwards market sometimes, and at Manioc Farmers Markets too. They were the first market we start operating here in Philadelphia. So that's a really special spot for us.
Tell our listeners where they can find your business and what your address is down there and how they can follow you on social media and where they can get much more information about your incredible baked goods. And then I want to come back with one more question.
Yeah, so Instagram is the best way to, you know, keep up to with everything we're doing, Cook Lab Bake House. And we're on Espacian on 1647. Espacianc, we're open from Thursday to Sunday from 10 to 4, and we can find all of our stuff there and also on our website. We ship nationwide.
Right. You are associated with Gold Belly, so you are shipping nationwide, and that is a wonderful thing that, you know, we can, especially to places where they may not have that Brazilian influence in the country, where people can get some of your great pastries and baked goods. So if you had to single out one thing about Brazilian food that you feel is really important, whether it's flavors or technique, it's really important for our listeners to know, what is the one thing that you would want to communicate to our listeners about Brazilian baked goods, Brazilian cuisine, eating in general?
I think about the comfort that the food brings to you. I think Brasilia food is a very comforting food. We are big in stews and rice dishes, and our pastries are, you know, like the cheesy bread. So that all, like, brings a lot of comfort. So I think when I'm looking to eat something, that's what I go for, what it brings me comfort.
That is absolutely an incredible great bit of advice, is to understand the culture and the people and the comfort food that they're doing. You know, sadly, and I know you know this as well as anybody, so many times we eat because we're hungry, or we eat on the run, and we lose that comfort food feeling and understanding. So I think that that's a great bit of advice for our listeners, to think about the people and think about the comfort food and, you know, everything goes with that. Thank you so much for being part of Food, Farms, and Chefs. Everyone, Coquette Bakery or Brazilian Bake Shop on East Passyunk, I highly recommend you stop by if you're in the area or just driving through Philadelphia. It's stop in, experience something new. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For being on Food, Farms, and Chefs.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Okay, let's take a break, and we'll be right back.
To become a sponsor of our show and have your business or event promoted on every single podcast platform, two Philadelphia radio stations on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. evening drive time, an FM station in New York, and to the millions of Facebook users worldwide with access to the Facebook mobile app. Send us an email to either foodfarmsandchefs@yahoo.com or diningonadime@yahoo.com.
And we're back. Chef Gene, introduce us to your fabulous guest.
Well, if you watch any food television, my next guest really needs no introduction, but it is such an honor to have her with us today. We're going to talk a little bit about what it takes to be a judge at an event like Dish It Up, which is coming up in May here at Lincoln Financial Field, which is an all-women culinary competition. And no better woman to be a judge for an all-female culinary competition than Barbie Marshall, Chef Barbie. You saw her on TV. You've probably had her food. Amazing talent. Chef Barbie, welcome to Food, Farms, and Chefs once again.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be
here. Well, thank you for being here. So, right off the bat, just a big hello. Everybody knows you from previous interviews. You know, food TV, just the work that you do in the community and how much fun you are and some of your hopeful new projects that you're going to be working on. But you are one of the big judges for the culinary competition coming up called Dish It Up, which, you know, tickets are available. Just simply Google Dish It Up. It is a great event. You've been a judge for a couple of years for this event. Tell us a little bit about what it takes to pick the best savory, the best sweet, you know, the best food prepared that day.
So we actually have a diagram that we go by that, you know, we can be completely unbiased. Like we'll start with a dish and go with the flavors. And then at the end of it, we just add up, you know, which of those dishes met all of the criteria, whether it was, you know, the ingenuity or the creativity or just the flavors. And so we just take the best out of whatever category that they're going for. And it's always come out to be really fair.
One of the things, And as a culinary instructor and a chef, that I always found extremely difficult, and you had to really work on it, and tell me if you experienced this, is when it comes to the actual taste and flavors, putting aside the visual. Because I've had food that looked absolutely horrendously put together, but then when I tasted it, it was just, you know, bursts of flavor and bursts of, you know, goodness going off of my mouth. Do you find the same thing on occasion?
Yes. And so that's why we also judge based on presentation. So if you do eat with your eyes first, and sometimes something that looks completely awful will taste absolutely wonderful. And sometimes something that looks absolutely wonderful will taste absolutely awful.
Right.
I'm not talking about
so good
competition. I'm just in general. So
Yeah, no.
You know, no, that's why we have to judge on so many different criteria.
Well, you have a really good panel of judges. I mean, you have Marilyn Johnson on there. You have Dave Sparrow, obviously, representing the Philadelphia Eagles. But you really have a great panel of culinarians. And I'm going to go on the record of saying most of them are women, which I love for this. Women always have a little bit better of a taste than men do. That's actually a scientific thing. So if anybody wants to get a debate with me, we can talk science on that one. But, you know, you're doing that. So thinking back in years past, and you've judged a couple times, tell us a couple of your favorite things. And I'm not saying things that won. I'm saying your favorites. that you have had through the years?
So one of my favorites is something that we can't get again. Bartender Katie Lou, a lot of people younger than us may not know her or remember her. She actually developed a purple drink for this event, which for years I didn't know it was formatted like a Long Island, but it was absolutely delicious. And so that was always my favorite thing, going and having at the event. One, because Katie was making it, and two, because the first year that I ever did it, Katie and I had been friends for a while, and you know, we were talking, and she said, you know, I have this thing to do. We were talking about, like, when we were going to be meeting up next and when I was possibly going to be in Philly. And I said, well, I have this thing I have to do on the same night, so that's not going to work. And it all of a sudden clicked to us that the thing that we both had to do on the same night was Women Against Abuse, was Dish It Up. And so it really bonded us in a way, knowing that we were helping and standing up to abuse and giving our time that way. So that was always my favorite thing about Dish It Up.
So for our listeners who don't know, Katie Loeb, who I had the honor of knowing for 20 plus years, who is in the Bartenders Hall of Fame in New Orleans, was maybe the Philadelphia's best mixologist, who has an incredible book published. Katie lost a battle of cancer a couple of years back. So when Barbie first, you'd never be able to get that again. It is with great sadness. As soon as you said that, it brought tears to my eyes that the person responsible for that is no longer with us. And her legacy in the city goes on and on and on. You know, one
it
of
really
the saddest days in the industry for me was you know, when she passed. And I still celebrate her birthday every year with one of her cocktails out of the book. Just a great, great force.
And her book is still available.
Yes, her book is still available. You get it on
Amazon, I think. Amazon. I'm actually in her book.
Yes, you are. Absolutely, you are. So I started in the catering industry with her many years ago. We worked together for several different caterers, and she started doing some consulting with me. So, but we digress on a very sad topic about an incredible human being. Dish It Up obviously has a great deal of meaning to you, as a big significance to you. Exactly that. The benefit to women who have gone through abuse or abusive relationships. The statistic that I threw out last week, 1 in 4 women experience intimate partner abuse. That is just mind-boggling. So this event directly benefits helping those women, you know, get the help that they need, get the resources that they need, and do things. How did you get involved?
I am 25% of all women, and I decided after it was time for me to get away and heal that the best way to pay it forward would be to remember that 25% of all women, under no fault of their own, have found themselves abused by an intimate partner.
Well, first and foremost, thank you for your bravery and your honesty and sharing that with us. You know, very, very touching. And you know, I don't know, and I'm never going to ask, but I would think that a lot of the people involved in Dish It Up have this similar stories. By nature, it's a, you know, it's something that draws them. There is
well,
a feeling at that event that's so unique.
But when some people are also involved, we often forget about the secondary victims of abuse, the children of abuse victims who are also in their own way abused, but maybe not the same way as someone in a DV situation. And you find chefs like Gordon Ramsay, whose mother was a victim of domestic violence, that always support things like this also. So I think that when you have something, an abuse with such high numbers, like 25% of all women are victims of abuse or DV, that, you know, those secondary people who may not have been old enough to stand up then are old enough to stand up now and say, you know, at least I can help this way.
So true. And that's one of the things that makes this event so special, is the feeling that you're talking about right now. There's so many people there that want to stand up. So are the honorary, you know, co-chairs and two of the prominent figures there that evening, you know, Troy Vincent, you know, an amazing football player, you know, future Hall of Famer, be argued, you know, Eagles Hall of Fame. He was one of those children that you talked about. His mm-hmm. wonderful wife was a victim also, obviously, before Troy, but a victim also. You know, so, you know, two people right there, and both of them giving back to, you know, a great cause, because they know the devastating effects. So, you know, it really is things. If you could paint a picture of the event for our listeners, because the event has a lot of emotion, but a lot of great fun, a lot of energy. Paint a little picture of what our guests would experience that day.
So this is actually the first time that the event is going to be at the Link.
Yes.
And I have taken part of some events at the Link. So I imagine that there are with a few differences, but guests will be able to sample the same dishes that the judges will be judging from the chefs. And we go in first and taste everything, and then everyone else comes in. I'm not sure if they do have a cocktail or the same as when Katie was doing it, but if they do, I'm not sure who the bartender is yet, or the mixologist is. So I'm sure there will be some kind of spirits to go along with it to make it a little bit lighter of an event. We do hear some stories of survival. And it is not a very heavy event. I feel like our conversation right now might be heavier than the event, but it is definitely for an amazing cause. So, you know, it's a way to, you know, celebrate women and celebrate the strength of women. And it in a way that doesn't also take away the fact that DV has no boundaries. Like, it can affect anyone. But Women Against Abuse in Philly is tailored to women. So this is their specific project. And the stories that they have helped and the services that they provide are 100% needed. So to get out and have, you know, the chefs, the women chefs of Philly get together and say, okay, let's get on board for, you know, this annual fundraiser for this cause is amazing for them to do, whether they're victims or not. And anyone is welcome. Like, you don't have to be a victim of DV to support DV victims.
Absolutely. It's a great night out. As I said last week, you know, being an old head, I feel a little discriminated against, because young professional ticket prices are just incredibly reasonable. So, you know, for those looking for a night out in Philadelphia, this is really a great event to get to, and, you know, have incredible food, wonderful drinks, meet chefs, you know, like, they're just wandering around or they're at their tables. You get to meet some of the finest, you know, chefs in the region and go through that. Just an incredible evening with, you know, chefs and people in the industry, as well as making a difference, and a huge difference that it is. So, you know, what a wonderful, great way. Who are you excited to see this year? I mean, obviously you saw the lineup, you saw some of the chefs that are coming. Is there anybody in there that kind of stands out and says, wow, you know, I'm interested in trying their food. I haven't had an opportunity yet. I'm looking forward to it. Is there anybody on that list that stands out for you?
I am excited for Julie Klein because she's a friend of mine. I've known her from a while back. I'm excited for Marie Spector. She is a pastry chef at Walnut Hill College, and I just really have a good time with her. She's also a La Dame d'Escoffier, and I've never had anything that wasn't delicious. I'm excited to see Kiki, who is judging along with me and not actually competing. Yeah. For mostly because last year the event, because of COVID, was done virtually. And so, you know, I kind of was not, I was a chef participant last year on the virtual.
Right.
And Kiki did some recipes and just was an amazing participant. So for her to come back this year as a judge, it's just really exciting to like see her after, you know, not being able to see anyone for the last 2 years, and for it to come back and be at the link. So I'm excited for all of it. Can I say that? I'm just excited for all of it and all of them.
Before we start to close out here, what's new in Barbie Marshall world? You are like one of the most exciting people that in the culinary world. I told you before the guests come on, my two daughters, Casey and Haley, are like huge Barbie Marshall fans. What's new in Barbie Marshall world? What can we look forward to, or, you know, what's happening in your world?
Well, I am still recovering from COVID, so there's a lot going on in my world. It's been 2 years of not having taste or smell, which I'm still cooking. It's a lot of muscle memory and just a lot of doctor visits and studying, like, what goes on. And I know you're thinking, how can you judge? I've had to learn how to taste and smell in a completely different way now. So when I tell you, like, it's got to be fair, it's one of those things that a lot of people don't know about me in the last 2 years, and I've become more open to telling them and sharing. Yeah.
If anybody can do the task that's ahead, it is you. Anybody who watched you on TV knows your energy, your dedication, your drive. You are your own hardest critic. So, you know, everybody else is going to be fine. So, you know, what you're doing. Anything else? I know that there was talk at one point in time, you know, about starting to put some of your incredible craft on down on paper again and doing some things like that. Anything that you know, we could tempt our listeners with?
I actually spoke with someone about that this morning, and I very much am thinking that very soon I need to write my culinary story on paper. And I have the perfect photographer for capturing all of my food when that goes into that book. You might know her.
I think you do. I think you do. I know who that is. It's our own Amaris Pollock, you know, an incredible food photographer. And she's going to be able to capture an amazing story because you are nothing short of amazing in what you do, in what you have done, in what you have overcome. You do that. Tell our listeners where they can follow you, where they can find out more information, and just, you know, where to follow you on social media.
On social media, I'm either Barbie Marshall or Chef Barbie Marshall on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And don't forget, on Dish It Up, you can find my story there on their website, womenagainstabuse.org.
Thank you, Chef, so much for being with us. Thank you for sharing your personal story, some of the things that you have overcome, which certainly gives inspiration to so many. Love talking to you. love having you on our show. I'm sure we will be back with you very soon. And obviously, we get to see you at Dish It Up. Thank you
so
much for being on Food Farms with Jeff. Absolutely. We'll share a cocktail.
All right.
Thank you, Chef.
Thank you, Chef.
Let's take a break, and we'll be right back.
Tune in to Dining on a Dime to hear from Gene Blum, our chef, educator, consultant, and historian. You can find him across social media at IBFoodie2 or Gene Blum at IBFoodie2@yahoo.com. And you can also tune in to listen to Amaris Pollock and find her across social media at ARPOLLOCKUS@gmail.com.
And we're back. Chef Gene, introduce us to your fabulous guest.
Well, it's always wonderful to have a friend and a colleague on to talk food, and somebody I know has a love of food like so few do. At this point in time, let me introduce Rashana Myers of Olive Lucy, as well as a great events professional and friend. Rashana, welcome to Food Farms and Chefs.
Hi, Gene. Thank you so much for having me here today. I'm really thrilled and excited to be here.
Well, thank you, because I know this happens to be a little bit of a busy week for you. You have a little something happening this weekend coming up. So mazel tov.
Thank you.
You have a mitzvah to host this weekend. So
yep.
You know, what a wonderful, wonderful thing going on there. So Olive Lucy, which I incorrectly thought was a franchise, and I found out it's not, and that makes it even, you know, for me, even better of a world. You ventured into this coming out of the events world. I had met you when you were doing planning, and you always had a great deal of love for food. What made you get into, you know, the Olive Lucy world?
I started with Olive Lucy in, I guess it was officially 2016. It was around that time I was retiring out of the meetings and events industry. And yes, we go back a long ways, Gene. I remember when. I have always had a passion for food, even long before meetings and events. My days of food go back to when I was in grade school, and I would sit around and watch Julia Childs on the TV, having no idea what she was actually doing, but just loved it. So it was great. But in 2016, when I was finally retiring out of meetings and events, my husband's best friend's father, who had started Olive Lucy in actually 2013, so the store is been around for a while, needed some help running his shop. And I was looking for something to do. And I figured this would be a good way to keep myself busy, keep myself occupied, and help him out in a time when he needed it. So that's how I got started in the shop.
One of the things that are most important in cooking, obviously, is great ingredients and a great foundation. And high quality oils, vinegars, seasoning, spices, things like that are really the start of all that. You know, skimping on the quality of your olive oil, you know, skimping on the quality of a good aged balsamic, whatever you're doing, you know, is never going to give you the outcome that you want. So tell our listeners some of the common misconceptions about quality olive oil, quality flavors that you find in oils and vinegars, some of the things that you come across in your day-to-day that people believe that are just not true.
Oh, I know, Gene. That's something we struggle with daily in our industry. And you hit one of the common misconceptions nail right on the head. Most people think that you can't cook with good extra virgin olive oil, or you can't use our flavored olive oils because they're only for drizzling. They're only for, you know, finishing or salad dressings, and it's just not true. Olive oil, extra virgin olive oil, is one of the oldest oils that, you know, society has cooked with for millennia. I mean, some of the oldest olive trees that are still producing fruit in
the Middle East and some of the other places that, you know, started with olives, have been using olive oil. It's the only oil they've ever used. We encourage our customers to cook with extra virgin olive oil, and especially high quality extra virgin olive oil, and use it for daily cooking. One of the biggest reasons why people don't is there's this conception out there that extra virgin olive oil in general, has a low smoke point. Yes, it is lower than some of the other oils, some of the refined oils that are out there, but a lot of scientific studies have been done throughout the world to let chefs and home cooks and everybody in the industry know that you can take your olive oil up to 425, 450. You can use it, you can fry with it, you can cook with it. You know, if you're going above that temperature, okay, you might want to consider another oil. But for most home cooks, you can cook with extra virgin olive oil and have no trouble at all.
Well, I'm good to know. I'm very happy to know that science has backed up what I do, because I cook with it all the time. And, you know, it's kind of like, to me, it's computer, you know, garbage in, garbage out, quality in, quality out. You know, you start with quality, and you're going to get a better flavor overall. And to me, that's very important with olive oil. Why would I want to start with something of a lesser flavor, lesser quality? You know that. So tell us a little bit about the product line. What do you carry?
So at our shop, we carry about 10 to 12 harvest seasonally extra virgin olive oils in the shop. They range in intensity from a mild all the way up to an extremely robust. And when I say seasonal, we have two harvests. We have the Northern Hemisphere harvest, which happens in October, November. And then we have a spring harvest. Well, it's our spring, but it's actually the Southern Hemisphere fall harvest in May. And you know, that's really what we love to promote in our store, because it's good quality extra virgin olive oil. In addition, we have some fun flavored olive oils, and you'll notice I called them flavored olive oils, not extra virgin olive oils, because once you add another substance, it is only considered an olive oil. And again, we have herbed, citrus, spicy, you know, all the different flavors of the rainbow, and great quality ingredients that you can cook with, that you can use on salads, you can use raw, you can use for dipping, whatever your heart desires. And we also have our balsamic vinegars. We carry a standard 18-year aged dark balsamic and a condimento, and a aged white, which is 12 years. And then we also have our flavored as well, balsamics, white and dark. They're fabulous. They're fun to cook with. Again, fun for dipping, fun for making marinades and dressings. And they'll just add a little flavor to any dish you're making. In addition to that, we do have a gourmet pantry of seasonings, spices, pastas, chocolates, honeys, teas, you name it. So we're almost like becoming a little gourmet grocery store, dry goods grocery store. So it's fun to come to the shop.
Well, I've purchased several of your oils at farmers markets and vinegars as well. I have a fig balsamic that I swear by. Just with fresh mozzarella, there's really not much that's better. I've had chocolate balsamic. I've had, you know, I have a pantry. I think Sue might, which you know, would probably say is a little bit excessive. I think I probably have 15 or 18 different olive oils in there, and then, you know, another dozen vinegars as well. And they all have a purpose, and they all have a use, and you know, they all blend, you know, add something, and you know, nothing like your selection. I mean, literally, to visit when you are set up at a farmer's market and to buy fresh produce, and then one of your oils and one of your vinegars or a couple of your oils, you know, whatever, and then take that home and just some great fresh tomatoes with a little bit of, you know, olive oil and balsamic and, you know, maybe a little chopped up. It's like living large. I mean, this is what people in many parts of the world have been doing their entire life and eating. So when I get into an Olive Lucy or experience an Olive Lucy and the flavors of your oils and your vinegars, to me, it's taking me back, you know, 100 years into, you know, eating the way that, you know, the Italians, the Spanish, the Portuguese, you know, people in the Middle East, people throughout the world have eaten fresh ingredients with a little bit of oil, a little bit of grape vinegar. I hope that people understand that about your store.
Yes, absolutely. It's a great way to bring tastes from all over the world into your kitchen. We have on our website and in our store, we have recipes and recipe cards that you can look online or take with you to, so you can learn how to use the products that we sell. And it's, you know, we love experimenting with cuisine because, you know, like the other night, last night I made almost a version of a chimichurri sauce. And I used cilantro and lime and roasted garlic and tomatillos and roasted poblano pepper. I threw them in the blender with our cilantro and roasted onion, olive oil, and made a sauce for our steak. It was phenomenal. It was delicious. And we can take another recipe that I just put up the other day was a coleslaw. You know, just make a fresh coleslaw mix, a little bit of mayo, our tarragon vinegar, salt, celery seed, and you're good to go. Simple, not even complicated, but it's just there. And we love it. And they're great ingredients. We say our tagline on our website is great meals start with great ingredients. And that's what we have.
It's absolutely the truth. That is really as simple as it gets. Yep. Tell us some other basic misconceptions that people may have. I mentioned one earlier. People, you know, go in the supermarket that, oh, I'm eating healthy, I'm going to buy white olive oil. I'm like, well, that refers to the color of the olive oil. It has nothing to do with, you know, calorie content or things like that. So, you know, what are some of the things that when people come in that you're able to educate them? Because you are an educator. You're teaching people.
Yes, we do educate people, and we do. So when people come in and tell me they buy light olive oil, at the grocery store, I explain to them that light olive oil, as you mentioned, is just light in color. It is a highly refined product, and you're going to pay about the same as you would for the extra virgin olive oil. And it's light in taste, not light in calories. All olive oils have the same calorie content and most of the same fat content. It's not a reduction. It's something, you know, the agencies came up with, your marketing agencies came up to sell more something, to sell more olive oil, refined olive oil. The other common thing that we educate people on, and I'm not here to bash anybody's product, but when you go to the grocery store and you buy an olive oil off the shelf, and it says it's a product of Italy, but it's not a single varietal olive oil. So it's not like an arbequina, or which is a type of olive, or a corvocosa, which is another type of olive. I advise people to look on the back of the bottle and see where the olives came from. Are they single sourced? Are they from all over a region and then shipped to Italy and pressed? Not that it's bad olive oil, but just know that those olives have been in transport and they may not be as fresh as something, as a product like that you would find in our store where harvest to press 3 to 4 hours. They literally are harvested off the tree. They go to the mill and then, you know, they get pressed, you know, they get pressed for the olive juice and then turned into olive oil. So we have really truly some of the freshest product out there somebody who's pressing their own oil and selling it.
I'm going to probably get a little hate mail for saying this, but just because it comes from Italy does not mean it's great olive oil. Many of the best olive oils in the world come from Spain as well, mm-hmm. and other regions of the world. So, you know, don't just associate, well, it's Italian olive oil, so it's going to be great.
I've had some really amazing olive oils from Italy, but just a side fact, somewhere between 43 and 45% of the world's olive production comes from Spain. So, you know, they're one of the biggest producers of olives for table eating and for table olives and for olive oil. So Spain is one of the largest producers. And then there's olive production all over the world. We have olive oils in our shop from Spain, Portugal, Greece, Italy. France produces olive oil. You know, most of the countries in the Middle East produce, olive oil. We have olive oils from Chile, South America, South Africa, Peru. Brazil's climbing on the production levels. So, you know, we are a country that, you know, and sort of embraced Italian olive oil, but you can find amazing olive oils from all over the world.
So where can people find your location? Where can people find you? Farmers markets, which one do you frequent? Or how can people get in touch with you and follow you on social media?
Sure. Our shop, Olive Lucy, is located in the heart of Jenkintown, Pennsylvania. Our address is 301 Leadham Street, Jenkintown, PA. We are open Tuesday through Saturday. Our hours on our website, and our website is olive-lucy.com. You can also follow us on our social media channels, mostly Facebook and Instagram. We're Olive Lucy PA on Facebook and Olive Lucy EVOO on Instagram. And we post fairly regularly. You can also find us at our farmers markets, and our season is starting in May. Our first kickoff date is at the Glenside Farmers Market. That starts the first week in May for us, and that's at the Glenside train station. And then our other market that we frequently visit is the Horsham Farmers Market, and our preview day for that is May 15th, and then we start up officially in the second week of June.
Well, thank you so much. Again, Olive Lucy, the base for your cooking. As summertime comes, fresh produce out on the grill, marinades, everything that you're going to be doing, you know, start with high quality products. Olive Lucy is the place to find them. Rashana, thank you so much for joining us on Food, Farms, and Chefs. Have a fabulous mitzvah for this week. Mazel tov. Congratulations.
Yes, thank you so much.
I guess I am getting old because I remember when this wasn't even a discussion. So
that's right. You've known me that long, Gene.
I have. Yes, I have.
Thank you.
You know, obviously give my best. Sue sends her best. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was my pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
PhillyRestaurantReviews.com for all information about the show. arpolicus@gmail.com. Or foodfarmsandchefs@yahoo.com to be a sponsor or a guest on the show. Chef Gene!
You can find me across social media at IBFoodie or at Gene Blum, or you can email me directly at IBFoodie@yahoo.com. That's IBFoodie2@yahoo.com. Have an incredible week, everyone. Don't forget to eat well.
We'll see you next week!